What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Locked On Yankees podcast, your daily podcast covering the New York Yankees. We are brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. If you're a new listener, hello and welcome to the show. I hope you enjoy today's episode. I am your host, Stacey Gottsoulias. I'm an author of Baseball Prospectus, and I run their Yankee site, BP Bronx. You can follow me on Twitter at Locked On Yankees or at my personal account, Stace Gotts. You can listen to and subscribe to Locked On Yankees on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, Player FM, and pretty much every podcast platform available. You can also listen to the show on our website, lockedonyankees.com. And finally, you can play Locked On Yankees on your smart speakers by saying play podcast Locked On Yankees. As always, you can email questions or comments to lockedonnyy@gmail.com. On today's episode, Manny Machado clarifies his Johnny Hustle comments. We'll get into that. We'll get more in depth with regards to the James Paxton trade. I'll update you on any other baseball news, and we're going to celebrate Ken Griffey Jr.'s 49th birthday. I know, we're a Yankees podcast, and that he tortured us Yankee fans for a long time in that very scary 1990s Seattle Mariners lineup, but the kid was an all-time great, and he deserves to be celebrated. First up, let's get into the Manny Machado stuff. This morning, Mark Feinsand of MLB.com published an article with new comments from Machado in which he clarifies his mood when he was talking about the Johnny Hustle comment, and it's interesting. The boy knows that there are a lot of teams looking at him and that he can make a lot of money, and that comment was not a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but with the way team owners are and GMs are, it is a big deal. Just to remind you, this is what he said. I'm not the type of player that's going to be, quote, Johnny Hustle. So, he said, when I was asked that question, I was definitely on the defensive, and I was wrong to answer it the way that I did, because looking back, it doesn't come across how I meant it. For me, I was trying to talk about how I am not the guy who is eyewash. There's a difference between fake hustle for show and being someone who tries hard to win. I've always been the guy who does whatever he can to win for his team. But I know how I said it and how it came across, and it's something I take responsibility for. I look forward to talking with each GM and owner that we meet about that or any other questions that they have. Like I said, pretty much every GM and owner is going to question him about that. So it's good that he said that. I just think it's amusing that the article by Feinsand says that he clarified the comments or the comment, and that other headlines are talking about how he's walking back on the comments. There's a difference between the two. And if you look at the outlets and the people writing about how he's walking back on his comments, they seem kind of salty. So I love the media so much. So that's good for Machado that he did that. He needed to do that for his own sake. And it's good that he did. He also said, it's been humbling to have multiple teams interested in me and have people talking about my free agency and what I should do, but I'm not the type of guy who's going to be out in front of a microphone for attention. That's just not my style. When the time comes, there will probably be a few of the teams that I will sit down with in person, but it's not something I plan on being very public about. So we'll see what happens with that. But like I said, it's a good thing that he did it, and it'll get everyone to, well, hopefully it'll get everyone to shut up about the original comments. Although that might be asking for too much. Now, talking about free agents, I saw a tweet earlier that mentioned how Bernie Williams re-signed with the Yankees the day before Thanksgiving in 1998. You guys remember that? If you're old enough to remember that, raise your hand. No, I'm kidding. I remember that. I remember when everyone thought he was going to jump to the Red Sox. My dad never believed that he was going to. I was always a pessimist, so I was afraid that he was going to. Thank goodness he didn't. But there was a tweet about the fact that he signed or re-signed with the Yankees the day before Thanksgiving, and that there were a number of big free agents that had already signed deals in November. And someone else chimed in and said how November used to be the big month. And lately, you see with free agency, especially last year with what was happening with, I mean, look at JD Martinez. He didn't sign until, when the hell did he sign? March? So it's just a different, it's all different now. I don't envision Manny Machado signing with anyone anytime soon. Do I think it's happening before the new year? Probably, but I don't think it's as big a chance as other people think. I think it's like 65-35 that Machado signs before the new year. Maybe he signs in January, like right after the new year, when the holidays are over. Because December's kind of tough with the holidays. I know that Mark Teixeira signed, you know, the news was that Mark Teixeira decided to sign with the Yankees the day before Christmas Eve 10 years ago. But it'll be interesting to see how Machado's free agency unfolds and Bryce Harper and if either of those guys come to the Yankees. So up next, speaking of coming to the Yankees, we're going to talk about the James Paxton trade and everything it entailed. But first, and we're back. So the Yankees traded for James Paxton. And this isn't shocking by any means, because as soon as the reports came out that the Mariners were willing to trade him this offseason, the Yankees were the number one team in everyone's mind. So the only thing that's really shocking about it is that it happened before Thanksgiving. So this trade was a big deal, especially because of the trade chips, so to speak, because Paxton is the only player on the Seattle side of the trade, while the Yankees dealt Justice Sheffield, Eric Swanson, and Dom Thompson Williams. Paxton has had some health issues, but when he is healthy, he's one of the best starting pitchers in the AL. One big issue with Paxton is that he doesn't last long into games. He pitched a career high of only 160 innings in 2018. He turned 30 this month, so it seems unlikely that he will suddenly start lasting longer into games. Some people think that's not a big deal because of the Yankees' bullpen, but how good can a bullpen be if they have a number of starters in the rotation that can't last past the fifth or sixth inning? So that's one strike against him. But other than that, he has a good fastball. He has a good cutter that works really well against right-handers. And he also has a curveball that when it's on, it's really on and no one can hit it. He seems to have improved his command. He used to have issues walking guys, but that seems to be something that he's eradicated. He strikes out a ton of guys. He struck out 208 batters in 2018. That's a good thing. And there may be a bit of an adjustment for him because he's spent his entire career so far in Safeco Field, which tends to be a pitcher-friendly park, while going to Yankee Stadium, which is obviously a hitter-friendly park. So there may be a bit of an adjustment period for Paxton making his starts in Yankee Stadium. We'll see how that goes. Hopefully the adjustment period won't be too long. So we'll see how that goes. So for Seattle, the top billing for that part of the trade goes to Justice Sheffield. He was part of the Andrew Miller deal. He was a first-round pick by the Indians in 2014. He is only 22 years old. He has 3+ pitches, which includes a fastball that he can dial up to 97. He has a slider that causes bats to swing and miss. He also has a good changeup. His problem is command, but he should be able to become a starter. I think that'll happen sooner rather than later. The other guys in the trade, Eric Swanson and Dom Thompson Williams. Swanson is a right-hander, so he also has a good fastball, an average slider, and a changeup. He can throw all three of those pitches for strikes. He doesn't throw as hard as Sheffield, but he's promising. He might be in the Mariners rotation at some point soon as well. Everything I've read about Dom Thompson Jr. suggests that he could be a good fourth outfielder. He hasn't been higher than double A. He's turning 24 in April, so he might be a non-factor in this trade. So people who are way smarter than me say that the Yankees definitely won this trade. But like I said yesterday, people also thought the Yankees won the Pineda trade, and we know how that worked out. So let's not count our chickens before they hatch, or whatever the hell that saying is. And I said yesterday, I like this trade. And like I said at the beginning of this segment, the Yankees were the team that everyone assumed Paxton would go to. And Brian Cashman said that he worked on this trade with DePoto for a month. So it's been in the works for a really long time, and it's a positive move. In more news about the Mariners, Ken Rosenthal reported yesterday that they had discussed a trade with the San Diego Padres, which would involve Will Myers. Remember Will Myers? Yeah, it's amazing how players go to San Diego and they're seemingly forgotten about. It feels like San Diego is on another planet for some reason, and I don't know why. I mean, if you want to move anywhere in the world that has the best weather, go to San Diego. Of course, you run the risk of a giant earthquake sinking it into the ocean, but, you know, you trade the good with the bad. So anyway, back to the actual trade news. Rosenthal said that Gene Segura and Mike Leake would be in the potential deal, but Leake would need to waive his no-trade clause, and Rosenthal said that Leake is currently weighing other options. He's more of a throw-in here, so they may, the Mariners and the Padres, get another player, you know, slotted into the trade instead of Leake. Leake is owed $27 million over the next 2 years. So that plays a big part in his involvement in any trade. So John Heyman reported that there are at least half a dozen teams in on Noah Syndergaard, and that the Mets are seriously considering trading Syndergaard if they could fill multiple holes with real impact. I'm not sure what the hell the Mets are doing. I don't think they should do it. A lot of people don't think they should do it. Ben Kaback of River Avenue Blues said on Twitter this morning that the Mets should build around Thor, DeGrom, and Wheeler. And I agree with him. What the hell are the Mets doing? I don't understand. They could easily win the second wild card if they needed to in 2019, if they get their crap together and not trade away Syndergaard. I don't understand. I don't understand how anyone can be a Mets fan. It's got to be the most frustrating thing on planet Earth. They just do not know how to do anything. On the other hand, if the Mets are really that desperate to get rid of Syndergaard, the Yankees have Sonny Gray. You could take him. That would be great. Obviously, that's a joke, and the Mets wouldn't be that dumb. At least I don't think they would be that dumb. Up next, we're going to celebrate Ken Griffey Jr.'s 49th birthday. I mean, I don't have a present for him, but I'll talk him up a bit in the next segment. But first, today is Ken Griffey Jr.'s 49th birthday. The kid was born November 21st, 1969. And if you're old, like I am, and remember his debut, you remember the fact that he was 19 when he made his debut on April 3rd, 1989. He was 19 years, 133 days old. He played his first game against the A's. He had 3 at-bats, 1 hit. At the time, I was a freshman in high school. It was my spring, I guess, semester. And I didn't realize at the time what a big deal it was that a 19-year-old was playing in the major leagues. 19-year-olds are usually in the minor leagues. And for him to play at the level that he did, at the age that he did, is unbelievable. Now, he I can't believe I said only. He played in 127 games that first season as a 19-year-old. He hit 16 home runs, and his batting line was .264, .329, .420. His OPS was .748. and he finished third in Rookie of the Year. You may be asking, who finished ahead of him? Well, I'm going to tell you. Greg Olsen won Rookie of the Year, and Tom Gordon came in second. Jim Abbott was fifth, and Kevin Brown was sixth. That's amazing. The following season, 1990, was his first as an All-Star. He also won the Gold Glove, and that started a run of 11 straight seasons as an All-Star. He hit 45 home runs in 1993, 40 in 1994. He hit 49 in 1996, 56 in 1997 and 1998. He hit 40 in 1999, 48 in 1999, and 40 in the year 2000. He won the MVP in 1997, which was well-deserved. Along with his 56 home runs that year, he finished with 147 RBIs. He batted 304, 382, 646. So he finished with a 1028 OPS. He had 393 total bases, and he was intentionally walked 23 times. After the year 2000, he made the All-Star team only twice more, in 2004 and 2007. He also had injury issues in a few of those years. In 2001, he only played in 111 games, and then 2002, 3, and 4, he played in 70, 53, and 83, respectively. 2005, he was back up to 128, and in the last 7 years of his career, his high was 144 in 2007. So for Griffey, it really was a tale of two careers. The second half of his career was marred by injuries that my dad were convinced were because of steroid use. My dad thought everyone was on steroids, so and I really wish he were alive to talk about that, because he really thought everyone was on steroids. He believed that Michael Jordan played baseball because he was actually suspended by the NBA for gambling, but they didn't want anyone to know, so they let him go play baseball. My dad was pretty kooky. I'll admit that. So when all was said and done, Griffey was a 13-time All-Star, 10-time Gold Glove winner, 7-time Silver Slugger. He was an All-Star MVP, he was a regular MVP, and he made the Hall of Fame. The one thing that he was never able to get as a player was a World Series ring. But there are a lot of players out there who never got World Series rings. So yeah, Ken Griffey in the 90s was a scary player. You'd see him come to bat and think, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. And usually something bad would happen. Not for him or the Mariners, but for the Yankees. But now that I've grown up and there's a good deal of distance from those years in which he scared the crap out of me, along with Jay Buhner and Edgar Martinez and everyone else in that damn lineup, I appreciate his career for what it was. So happy birthday to Ken Griffey Jr. You're only a year away from turning 50, you old fart. I'm just kidding. Honestly, I can't even joke about how old he is because I'm only 5 years younger than he is, and not that far away from 50 myself. So that is it for today's episode of Locked On Yankees, which is brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I have been your host, Stacey Gottsoulias. Once again, you can follow me on Twitter at the Locked On Yankees account or at my personal account, Stace Gotts. And you can email questions to lockedonnyy@gmail.com. You can also rate this podcast on Apple and on Google. You can subscribe at Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, Player FM. And if you could be so kind, spread the word about this podcast to your fellow Yankee fans or even your fellow baseball fans. I do go into other Major League Baseball news. So I would like to wish you all a happy Thanksgiving. There will be no show tomorrow. We were all given the day off because who wants to record a podcast when you can stuff your face with turkey, mashed potatoes, pumpkin pie, and all that good stuff? So I hope you all have a nice and safe holiday. If you don't live in the United States, I hope you have a nice Thursday, and I will talk to you all on Friday.